Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
This is Basketball History 101 with Rick Loaiza.
Welcome back to award-winning Basketball History 101, part of the Sports History Network. I am your host, Rick Loaiza, and this is the podcast where we bring to life some of the forgotten stories from basketball history. We are bringing old-school basketball to a new-school audience, and today we bring you the story of the retirement of Elgin Baylor. Now, I shared a bit about this during our two-part episode on the life and career of Elgin Baylor. Now, those were episodes 118 and 119 if you want to go back and check them out. But today, I want to do a deep dive into the event that led to his retirement, because there is a lot more there that I was not able to share as part of my original profile on Baylor. Now, before I keep going, I need to share a bit about who Baylor was. He was hands down one of the greatest players to come through the NBA. Most basketball historians place Baylor in their top 20 players of all time. He was that good. In today's NBA, when you think of players with hang time, you are probably thinking of players like Zach LaVine or Aaron Gordon. In the previous generation, we are talking about Vince Carter. But before him, there was Kobe Bryant. If you keep going backwards through history, there was Michael Jordan and Dominique Wilkins, and before that, there was Dr. J, and before Dr. J, it was Elgin Baylor. He was the first guy that surprised people by how long he seemed to hang in the air. He really was the first player in the NBA that would really rise up to dunk the ball. He started his career in the NBA as a 24-year-old rookie in 1958, which was only the 13th season of NBA basketball, and he revolutionized what was possible, and he could fill it up. He played 14 seasons in the NBA, and he had an average of 27.4 points per game for his entire career. Now, that puts him in third place all time for career scoring average. Michael Jordan and Will Chamberlain both finished their careers with a 30-point per game average for their entire careers. But in third place all time is Elgin Baylor with 27.4 points per game. That is how much he was a scoring threat. But again, this is not a profile on his entire career because we already did that episode. This is talking about his retirement, but I need to give some context in order to share the main story. So here is the main story. During the 1970-71 season, Elgin Baylor was playing in his 13th season of NBA basketball, and he was 36 years old, which was absolutely ancient by NBA standards of the day. Rarely did players play beyond the age of 32 back then. The medical knowledge and training methods of the 1960s were nowhere near what they are today. Today's NBA player has so much more knowledge about how to train and prepare his body for efficient work, recovery, nutrition, weight training, etc. But in the 1960s, a player just played with little to no preparation in the way that we think of it today. So, just the fact that he was 36 years old and still playing was a minor miracle. However, in the second game of that season, he went down with a significant knee injury. Now, it is hard to tell exactly what the injury was because it was never completely diagnosed. But whatever it was, he missed the rest of that season. Remember, only two games into the season, and then he missed the entire year after that. Now, I want to be clear, I am not a doctor, but my best guess is that what he was dealing with was some sort of a microfracture in his knee. The thing was that back in the 1970s, there was no machine that existed that could detect such an injury. Again, I am not saying that he definitely had a microfracture. I don't really know. However, what I am saying is that today it is extremely likely that the doctors would have been able to properly and accurately diagnose the nature of the injury and prescribe a treatment plan that would have gotten Baylor back on the court in a couple of months. But back in 1970, the doctors just said to just take the rest of the year off and come back the following year and hope for the best. There was no prescribed treatment for him other than just to rest his knee. Well, the following year came, and now it was the fall of 1971. So even though Baylor had taken nearly the entire previous year off because of his knee injury, he was now 37 years old, and that was doing him no favors. As many like to say, Father Time is undefeated. Now, he came back to the Lakers and played in the first 9 games of the season, and their record was 6-3, which is not horrible. But brand new head coach Bill Sharman did not like what he saw. He wanted to run a fast break style of basketball, and he wanted a style that included all 5 players on the court working together, setting screens, moving the ball, cutting to the basket, and hitting the open man. That was Boston Celtics style of basketball that he had learned while playing for Red Auerbach. It was a proven style, and he wanted the Lakers to buy into it. Now, just as a quick side note, those 3 losses were the exact same 3 games that Jerry West had missed. So the Lakers were actually 6-0 with West in the lineup. Anyway, in the fall of 1971, the Lakers were not running the fast break the way that Sharman wanted, and they were playing too much isolation basketball. Now, he diagnosed that issue as being Elgin Baylor. When fast break opportunities were there, Baylor was not part of them. Baylor was slow to join the fast break. He just did not have the speed to keep up with his teammates anymore. And then when the Lakers set up in the half court, the ball gets stuck in the hands of Baylor. Now, I will say this, Elgin Baylor was a very proud man, and he had a very strong sense of his place in basketball history. He knew that he was one of the best players to ever lace them up. He was used to being able to take his defender one-on-one and make him look foolish. Baylor was one of the best one-on-one players to ever come through this league. But with his bad knees, he just did not have it anymore. Baylor started to become a black hole on offense. The ball went into him, but it never came back out. Sharman knew that this style of offense was not going to win a championship, and Sharman's goal from day one was to win a championship. He knew that the Lakers of 1971-1972 had the best talent in the league. Sharman decided that he had to make a change, a significant change. Now, this is a good place to take a break, and I'll be right back with the details on the change that Sharman had in mind for the Lakers.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings your sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog and for gallery prints and gift items. Plus get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes.
Hello, sports history fans. I'm Ross from the podcast Pigskin Tales. You're about to jump into another thrilling sports history moment, but first, let's dive into today's sponsor, just in time for the holiday season. Introducing Art of Words, the brainchild of word artist Dan Duffy from Philadelphia. Dan meticulously crafts stunning images by handwriting relevant words from some of the greatest sports moments in time. These unique, budget-friendly illustrations are the perfect gift, sparking cherished memories and capturing hearts. Choose from city skylines, sports, history, and musicians to find a piece for everyone. And here's the exciting part. For that sports fanatic in your life, gift them a piece of their favorite team or player's history. Art of Words tells a compelling story. Explore collegiate stadiums, each meticulously crafted with every football victory etched into words. Or venture into baseball stadiums, handwritten with every player from the team's illustrious history. My favorite on the site is Bryce Harper 2021 MVP year. Because I'm a big stats guy, I think that's one of the coolest things ever. Check it out. Don't wait. Order a print today for yourself and your loved one this holiday season. Transform your wall into a gallery of captivating art and surprise your family and friends with a print of their own. Use code SHN15 at artofwords.com for a 15% discount on your order in November and December. Visit Art of Words, where words magically transform into stunning art, evoking cherished memories and touching the hearts of those who you care about. Again, use the code SHN15 for 15% off at artofwords.com.
Welcome back to the show, and let us continue with the story of the retirement of the great Elgin Baylor. As I mentioned before the break, it was the fall of 1971, and the Lakers were 6-3 on the very young season. But the new coach, Bill Sharman, did not like what he saw. He had to make a change, and it had become obvious that Elgin Baylor was not the player that he used to be, and he was beginning to hold the Lakers back offensively. Now, this is something that every professional athlete has to deal with at some point in his career. We all know that as a player ages, his skills diminish to the point where he can no longer play at the level necessary to keep his spot on the team. There are some players who leave the game with gas still in the tank. When Kobe Bryant retired, he was definitely slowing down, but if he really wanted to, he could have played in the league for another 2 to 4 years. Then there are other players like Vince Carter, who played until the tank was completely empty and the wheels had fallen off, and there was nothing left. And I respect both decisions. Some players want to go out while they still can play at a high level, and others will play until there's nothing left because there are very few jobs in this world that pay as well as being an NBA player. Now, this is where Elgin Baylor was in his career. It was November 5th, 1971, and the Lakers were having their morning shoot-around before taking on the visiting Baltimore Bullets that night. While the rest of the team was putting up shots at one end of the court, off at the other end of the court, Elgin Baylor was having a private conversation with Bill Sharman and Fred Shouse, the Lakers general manager. Now, there was no yelling or screaming or emotions. It was a very calm conversation, and then Elgin Baylor left the gym, never to come back. Bill Sharman then walked over to the rest of the team and let them know that Baylor was no longer part of the Lakers and that backup player Jim McMillan was going to be the new starter in Baylor's place. So what happened in that conversation? Well, there is a bit of dispute here. Bill Sharman has been interviewed a number of times about that conversation, and Elgin Baylor has also been interviewed about that conversation. Now, their version of the story changed with almost every retelling, but here are the elements in common in every version of the story. As Baylor and Sharman were talking, it was acknowledged that Baylor was not the player that he used to be and that the injury from the previous year, the one that caused him to miss all but 2 games, was still giving him problems. His knees were in pain and Baylor was not able to keep up with the fast break offense that Sharman wanted to run. The second thing that is consistent in every version of the story is that Sharman suggested that Baylor come off the bench and play fewer minutes. The idea was that with fewer minutes, Baylor would not have to pace himself and he could go all out while on the court. The third thing that was consistent with every version is that Baylor said no, that he would not come off the bench or accept a reduced role on the team. So he retired and walked out of the gym without even saying goodbye to his teammates. Now, part of it, I understand. Baylor viewed himself as one of the greatest superstars to ever lace them up, and he either wanted a superstar role on the team or no role at all. Now, the part I do not understand is that he did not even say goodbye to his teammates. He just walked out of the gym, and that was it. Now, that was particularly hurtful to Jerry West. West and Baylor had been through so many battles together, and for Baylor to just walk out was like a slap in the face. The combination of West and Baylor had been to the NBA Finals 7 times. And they lost all 7 of them. Actually, Baylor had gone to 1 NBA Finals before West even arrived in the NBA, and he lost that one too. I cannot think of any other player in league history who has played in the NBA Finals 8 times without winning any of them. But in any case, West was hurt and disappointed that Baylor did not even say anything to him. Of course, the timing of the retirement could not have been worse for Baylor. That night, with Jim McMillan in the starting lineup in Baylor's place, the Lakers defeated the Baltimore Bullets by a score of 110 to 106. And that very night that Baylor retired was the start of the Lakers' famous 33-game winning streak. It is still the longest winning streak in North American team sports history. With McMillan in the starting lineup, the fast break was working to perfection, and the ball was no longer getting stuck in isolation situations. The Lakers ran roughshod over the rest of the league and finished with what was then an all-time best record of 69-13. It was not until the 1996 Chicago Bulls broke that record 24 years later, and the Lakers demolished everyone. They even dominated the playoffs with a record of 12-3 against the very best competition that the league had to offer. They blew out the New York Knicks 4-1 to clinch their first championship for the Lakers since moving to Los Angeles. Jerry West finally had his first championship on his 8th trip to the finals. And as the horn sounded on that final game of the finals, Jerry West has said that while he was happy, the feeling was not so much one of elation, but one of relief. After so many tries, he finally won the championship. His career had been validated, at least in his own mind. Also, there was some sadness because he knew that Baylor should have been part of it. Had Elgin Baylor accepted a reduced role coming off the bench, he would have been part of that championship. It is really unfortunate the way the whole thing went down. The timing of it all was rather astonishing. But I guess Bill Sharman really knew what he was doing when he decided that replacing Baylor in the starting lineup with McMillan was exactly what the Lakers needed in order to win the championship. It is just too bad that Baylor chose to not be part of it. Nonetheless, he still is one of the greatest players in Lakers history and in basketball history. He established hang time and set the stage for 101 play to develop. Well, that is it for today. Join us next time when we share the 5 basic principles of basketball that were developed by the inventor himself, Dr. James Naismith. That's next time on Basketball History 101, part of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of Sports Yesteryear. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com to find out more about this and other sports history podcasts. If you like what you hear, please hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast. And check out our page on Facebook. It's called Basketball History 101 Podcast. There you will find shorter historical posts as well as comments and discussion starters on today's game. I also will announce there when new episodes come out. I want to thank my producer and editor, Jacob Loaiza. Join us each week as we continue to mine the history of basketball for more great stories from the past. Take care and see you soon.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
This is Mark Mortier, and if you're a sports history fan like me, tune in and hear me talk about some great sports moments of the past. Growing up during the 1970s, I got to watch some of the most iconic moments in sports history. Hank Aaron breaking Babe Ruth's home run record. Willis Reed limping out of the locker room in Game 7 of the NBA Finals at Madison Square Garden as the fans erupted with a thunderous ovation. The 1980 Miracle on Ice as Team USA defeated the powerful Soviet Union in the Olympics. Listen every Tuesday on Yesterday Sports.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.